The only title this show cares about is the city's next one.
As the confetti flies, the colors are silver, blue, and red.
So we'll call it what it is. Afternoons with Hart, Fitzy, and Johnson on WEEI.
WEEI Afternoons back here at Fenway Park with the manager of the Boston Red Sox. Alex Cora is brought to you by Shaw's and Star Market, the official supermarket of the Red Sox Radio Network. By Arbella, here for baseball fans, here for good. And by John Sewer and Drain Cleaning, the name to know when your drains don't flow. Mr. Cora, things are certainly flowing for your baseball team right now.
Playing well. Little by little, we have found our identity in every aspect of the game. Like I've been saying all along, if we pitch, we were going to be okay, and we're doing that. But offensively, it's a different unit compared to months ago, running the bases well, playing good defense, and right now we're in a good streak right now.
That's on the field. We all got some news today that Roman Anthony apparently has agreed to or is close to an 8-year, $130 million contract as the manager. That's got to be a nice thing to hear, a little cherry on top of the way you're playing right now.
Well, I mean, hopefully, you know, I wish I could say more, but hopefully we get some good news sooner rather than later.
So the management program that you guys are deploying for Garrett Crochet seems to really be paying off. A couple extra days here or there as well. How difficult is that? Because obviously you'd want to run the beast out there as often as possible. And how's the dialogue between management, team, and the player?
Yeah, obviously we want him out there every 5 days. And that's probably the best way of doing it. But at the same time, understanding that this is his first full season as a starter. And, you know, we haven't kind of like slowed him down from the get-go. You know, we used to be very careful the first months of the season with our starters and then let him go in May. This year we were very aggressive. Understanding that the schedule was going to slow down at one point, we were going to get a lot of off days throughout the month. I think it's 3 or 4 every Thursday. So we plan accordingly. Everybody remembers the Mets start. You know, we limit him to 80, 85 pitches. But then after that, we gave him the green light to go 100, 110, 115. He decided not to pitch in the All-Star game, which is awesome. And then we push him back 2 days, right, in the Chicago series. We push him back 2 for the next one. And we skip 1, and now he's a full go. And that's very important for us because we do believe there's – unfinished business, right? And we need him to be healthy and fresh for the stretch run to do the cool things that we do in September and hopefully October. And he's in a great place right now.
Alex, did you have to say anything by what some might perceive as inactivity at the trade deadline to your team? And if are you surprised at all by the way the guys have responded to the trade deadline, winning 5 in a row? Because in the past, it always hasn't been the best response, but it seems like your team this year responded beautifully after that.
Yeah, we learn over the years. Every year is different, right? And the 22 team, you know, got punched in the gut, you know, when we traded Christian, you know. And we had guys that, you know, spend a lot of time with him, starting with Xander. Christian was a big part of us in 18, so it's not that we didn't know how to respond, but it was like, oh gosh, you know, this is really happening. The last few years, it's been okay. I believe last year it wasn't about us playing bad baseball. It was about the teams around us getting better and us being hurt. You know, we didn't have Chris Martin. We didn't have Slayton. The bullpen wasn't great, and we weren't able to hold a few late leads, starting in L.A., there were 2 of them. Then in Colorado, the same thing. And then I think Houston came here and Pax got hurt on Sunday, put us in a bad spot the rest of the week. This year, we're healthy. The bullpen, numbers-wise, is the third best bullpen in the big leagues. Offensively, we turned the corner a month and a half ago, and our starters are doing an amazing job. Gio, Bayo have done great, right? I think Bayou is top 10 right now in ERA. And we had that guy every 5 days, the number one, the beast. You know, we got Crochet. We didn't have that last year. And every 5 days, like Mike DeRosa says on the network, is win day. You know, you feel like, okay, you know, our big boy is on the mound. If we got a long winning streak, we're going to continue that. If we got a losing streak, we're going to stop it. And that's what he means to the team. That's what he means to the organization. And that's why I felt that, you know what? We added Matsy. We got May. He's a good pitcher. Both of them, they're going to help us. And then we're going to get healthy, too, with Slayton. So we're in a good spot.
So I got to be honest with you. We were here on Friday, post-trade deadline. Mm-hmm. I was cranky.
I bet.
And I was going to the game that night. And I was, let's just say, dubious. Cooper Criswell's on the mound, not Crochet. Mm-hmm. How important was that game? I'm a believer in butterfly effect. That was he pitched maybe the game of his career. You guys win in an electric environment. Felt like it jump-started the rest of the weekend.
Yes. What Coop did, I was talking to a buddy of mine today, you guys send down Coop. And like, that's how it works. But if we, pull this off and we win the division and we do cool things in October, we're going to look back at Cooper Criswell and say, that's when he started. He set the tempo for the rest of the weekend. The guys have maintained the momentum. We're playing a brand new baseball we haven't played here in a while. That inning on Sunday against Framber, running the bases, bunting, hitting the ball on the ground, and the contact play, that was one of those innings that in spring training you envision. At one point, we're going to do all the little things, right? And it doesn't happen. And we did. And we're playing a good baseball team right now with the Royals. We did our job the first two. Michael, he's a tough customer. He's one of the best pitchers in the big leagues. So go out there and try to sweep him. And then, go to San Diego. I think it's Nick, actually, on Friday. Nick Pivetta. Nice. That's going to be electric. Yeah, Skippy's going to be ready for us, and we're going to be ready for him, and it should be a fun weekend.
I know you keep in touch with a lot of the guys, so to have to go against Walker now and then go against Nick as well, it's a little emotional, but obviously you're...
Yeah, I'm used to it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
We got so many guys all over the place.
So we have an ongoing debate here on the show, and we've actually asked the audience and put it out to social media. What component of the Red Sox do you give the most credit to for the surge right now, late season? Is it the youth movement? Is it the veteran players? Is it the pitching? Could it be management as well? You're welcome. Or could it
you
be
didn't win the poll, just an FYI.
I bet I did it.
No. But also, I just want to take a moment to tip the cap to and maybe give you a moment to shout out some of the guys, the unheralded ones. Nobody on their Boston Red Sox bingo card had significant contributions from, Toro, Gonzalez, and Narvaez at the beginning of the season. Now, where would you be without guys like that chipping in?
Not where we at. What Carlos have done behind the plate, and actually Connor has been playing better the last 2 weeks. It's been amazing. Casas goes down, and all of a sudden Toro Gonzalez became a really good first baseman. We send down KC, and Romy has played well at second. Hammy has contributed defensively, running the bases. You go around, man, and to be a good baseball team, everybody has to contribute. If there's one aspect of the game that I'm being very happy with, and it started, I think it was in Philly, is the base running part of it. We are a very athletic team, and for some reason, we didn't take off early. We did a few things to unlock a few guys on the lineup, putting Roman leading off and JD hitting third, who's actually hitting fourth today. So we can be kind of more aggressive from the middle of the lineup down. And you saw it yesterday, base hit to center field. Willier goes to first to third. We've been doing that a lot. Romy tacks from first on a fly ball by Hammy, gets to second. Jaron hits a double. We score. So that aspect of the game is one that we were missing, and we've been very efficient and very aggressive. And I like that. Obviously, the kids help a lot. And not only on the field, but in the clubhouse, man, when you walked in, when I was a rookie, I will go to the veterans, right? And the Sheffield, Bobby Bonilla, Devon White in L.A. Now you see the veterans going to Roman and Marcelo. I mean, they love it. They love just being around them. They want to win. That's the cool thing about them. Roman said it in the beginning about expected numbers. His expected numbers were up there, but his actual numbers were he was hitting 180, whatever. And he's like, in the big leagues, it's not about expectancy. It's about contributing, and he's done that. And we have a good baseball team. We're in a good place.
Alex, you said that you have an identity now, suggesting that maybe before you didn't. And I'm wondering, what changed? Because a lot of people say there was a change in pitching philosophy and hitting philosophy kind of around the same time before that 10-game win streak, before the All-Star game. That's where it felt like things changed. But it feels like there's guys are clicking when it comes to pitching and hitting. What do you contribute that to? Where'd that happen? And am I accurate in saying that?
Yes, you are. And I think personnel change. We are making more contact offensively. We're not swinging and missing that much. We're hitting the fastball, something we struggled with the first 2 months. Trevor, if you look at his numbers against fastballs early on, he was hitting like 180. Now he's hitting 380 the last 2 months. And it's something that as a group, we kept talking about it, and when Velo dominates the game, you have to hit that pitch, or you have to fight it, one of the two. And if you look at our record, when we strike out 10 or more times, it's not good. When we strike out less than 10 times, it's really good. And we made a conscious effort of making contact. Defensively, we're really good at what we do. The outfield defense is legit. Alex and Trevor in that side of the infield is one of the best, if not the best, in the big leagues. And Carlos behind the plate, he's the best defensive catcher in the big leagues. When you pitch and play defense, you have a shot. Look at Milwaukee. Look at the Rays. Even Toronto. Toronto, yeah, they got Vladdy, but their defensive unit is amazing, and they can pitch. So we bought into that concept, and so far, so good.
Alex Cora here with WEEI Afternoons at Fenway Park. You used the term greedy last year. I think some fans are starting to get greedy now. They're starting to project forward to the late in the season. What do you need to do better to be the best Red Sox baseball team in 2025?
Just continue to what we're doing right now. Stay the course. Something we talk every big meeting before a series, you know, like this is who we are. I made a point of telling the guys in Chicago after the 10-game winning streak, the All-Star break, we go to Chicago. Everybody, you play the Nationals. You play the Rockies. No, we play the Rays, and we swept them at home. You know, we won 4 games in a row against a good baseball team, and I told them, this is who we are. This is not a hot team. You know, we are really good at what we do, and it's working. It's working. And one thing they do, they, like, yeah, we won the series. They won more. You know, we got Michael. We know it's tough. But we got May on the mound, and let's go. Let's win and have a happy flight and go to San Diego. Don't get ahead of yourself. Stay in the moment, and so far it's working.
Is there any one thing that you noticed that helped unlock Jarren Duran or that got him going on the hot streak that he's been on the last couple of weeks? Because we were told in the preseason, Bregman said, so story goes, so goes this offense. But I feel like because of how emotional and physical and how much effort he puts into it, so goes Duran, so goes the whole team.
Yeah, he had a tough road trip when we went to Seattle, San Fran, Anaheim. It wasn't great. Then he came home and had a conversation with the hitting coaches and with Alex, with Breggy. And the message was like, swing less. You know, like you're chasing too many pitches. You're actually swinging at pitches you cannot handle. If you strike out looking with a fastball down and away, so be it. You know, like you're not going to do – and you're not going to do damage with that pitch. Maybe you can follow it off, but hey, man, you're not doing a good job controlling the strike zone. He started doing that. He started walking when we came back. And when you start walking, you start dominating the strike zone. And with his swing, he's going to do damage. And right now, he's in a good spot. The ball he hit yesterday off the wall, that's another great sign. It feels like hitting him lower in the lineup, and he's still a big part of what we're trying to accomplish. He's in third, fourth, kind of like relax him a little bit.
Yep.
He didn't have to set the tempo. I mean, when you're at home, third out, you go in, you're leading off. Okay, I got to go. You know, they follow my lead. Now it's the other way around. He lets the first two guys do their thing, and then just it's a regular at bat. So I think that move help him a little bit, and we'll lead him off here and there, but he's doing an outstanding job controlling the strike zone.
Any chance we'll see Marcelo anytime soon? What do you know about his
age? Yeah, I mean, he decided to take a shot, you know, and to be honest with you, we'll see where we at, but it tells you who they want to be, you know, like he couldn't go on the route of having surgery, and the season is over, and that's it. No, I want to play, you know, and same thing with Roman yesterday. I'm ready to play, Alex. Narvi yesterday, you saw him limping. I don't want to come out of the game. And sometimes as a manager, you're hesitant because you're looking at the big picture, but there's a message these kids are sending to the whole group. Like, we're grinders, you know, we want to play baseball. And there are three rookies that want to play every single day. They want to contribute to what we're trying to accomplish, and that's refreshing for us.
Two quick things before we get you out of here. First, what should we expect from Dustin May tonight in his debut?
Just go out there and compete. We saw him that Sunday, and Alex got a hanging sweeper and hit it out of the ballpark, but he did a good job with us. The four-seamer played. The sinker is a good one. The slider is great. We'll talk about usage later on, but not try to do too much. You know, he's been around the last few days. He's enjoying the environment. He comes from a great organization that they've been very successful the last few years. So I don't think he's going to panic out there. So go out there and compete.
And then I got to ask you, we had Rob Bradford in here on Friday, and he let us in on a little deal you made with him that if
you know what, he interviewed yesterday, you know, for the brand. That's how.
Yeah, the brand. Baseball isn't boring.
He reminded me of that.
Did you really agree to get a baseball isn't boring tattoo?
I agreed to that. I didn't talk to the family about it, but hey, man. Hey, if I have to do that, that means that we're gold. We're gold.
Last question, Alex. So in about an hour, we're going to interview the manager of the Braintree 12 and under Little League team that is on a heater in the Little League World Series, undefeated, haven't given up a run in like a month. If they win their next game, they go to represent Massachusetts in the Little League World Series. Any advice for them?
Keep doing what you're doing. I mean, keep pitching. That's the most important thing. And at that age group, I was talking to the guys yesterday. It has to become very expensive, you know, when you keep dancing, right? Yes. Like, keep going. Yeah. So, rooting for you guys, and don't change a thing, you know, and hopefully they get to Willingsport, which is, a great experience. We were there a few years ago, and it's amazing what they do there, and it's a huge tournament.
All right, Alex, good luck tonight.
Thank you, guys.
We'll be watching. Alex. See you next week.
Yep.
Thanks, Alex.
Sir.
Alex Cora, the manager of the Boston Red Sox, rolling still, 7-game winning streak. WEEI Afternoons will react to it next here.
Jones and Keith, WEEI. You hear that music, you know it's time for Rob Bradford. Baseball isn't boring. WEEI.com. You can check it out on the Odyssey app. The Baseball Isn't Boring podcast is brought to you by McFarland Energy, the heating, cooling, and bioheat delivery pros that Eastern Mass and all of Cape Cod depend on. At McFarlandEnergy.com. Rob Bradford, what's going on? How you doing this week?
I'm so good. And by the way, we do know that Spooky is for real. I never really let that music soak in before, but thank you for letting it play out a little bit. That was awesome. And McFarland, to you both, you did excellent job in Foxborough. I listened to every last minute, so awesome job.
We did. Well, I'm happy that you gave a voice to that, because we've been waiting for those compliments for quite a time. We've been complimentary of the Roman Anthony extension. How did it come together? Why now? This is something that Kennedy revealed. They've been talking about going back to winter meetings. How did it all come together?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was a no-brainer, because when you identify that a guy, they think he's going to be a superstar, you have to do these. This is how baseball works. But the problem is, I always thought the problem was that, yeah, you can do the deals for Rafaela, you can do deals for Bayo and Christian Campbell, but those guys are, like, happy to be there in the conversation, guys. Roman Anthony is a guy who is, he knows, like, he's going to make his money. He knows, like, how he's perceived. And those guys, as we found out with the final number, those guys are the hardest guys to find, to lock in on, because we see so many of them just want to ride it out. Now, I will say this, and I wrote about this. I think that the Red Sox learned their lesson a little bit. You go back to Mookie Betts, when Mookie Betts said that the toughest contract that he ever had to turn down was that first offer. So if that's the case, and you missed that with Mookie, what does that tell you? That tells you that you have to be you should be super aggressive when it comes to that first offer, because you got to blow them away. You got to show them numbers that they're like, oh my God, I didn't think I was going to make that. Because once they pass on that, you get a little bit deeper. And we saw it with Mookie. We've seen it with plenty of guys. It becomes really, really uncomfortable, particularly for position players.
So what do you think, not that any player on the team is surprised necessarily that Roman Anthony is going to be a big part of the future of this team, but now that he has this contract, now that Sidon Rafaela has his contract, Jaron Duran and Willy Abreu, are they both approaching this like, hey, let's get after it for 2 months, and then, you know, one of us is going to be gone?
Well, I think that we've been talking about this for a while. That, you know, there was so much so that right in June you were talking about that potentially you're going to have to deal one of them at the deadline and get that changed in a hurry. But I think that with Duran and Abreu, absolutely. I mean, you're right. You have this is your outfield. You have Rafaela, you have Anthony, and then you have two guys who hit from the same side as Anthony. So I think that this offseason, you're going to see that revisited. And the other part about this is that, you know, with Durant especially, there's been no talks of contract extensions. You know, I don't know about Abreu. I don't think there's been any talks of contract extension there, too. So I think both those guys in the offseason, you're going to be hearing talked about it. But I think it, particularly when it comes to Durant, because this is the guy that we had the conversation about for about a month and a half leading up to the trade deadline.
Is this the way they're going to do business, Rob, and separating Abreu and Durant? That's interesting that there haven't really been any conversations that have picked up any traction with those two. Is this the way of doing business for the Red Sox now going forward? They are going to focus on retaining young talent as opposed to being big players in free agency. They haven't been big players in free agency in some time. So is this the way of doing business going forward, or are they going to try to marry it up with being aggressive in free agency?
You mean other than Bregman, right?
Well, but Bregman really wasn't a big splash. It really wasn't. It's a 1 year deal that could be a 3 year deal and $130 million. That's not that different than Story, honestly.
Yeah, well,
that's
okay.
Not,
well,
that's
I mean,
not
think,
so, that's not you, Soto. Mean, that's not Judge. That's not big. That's not a.
Oh
huge,
no. And you get, yeah, and I mean, listen, I mean, I do think that they were in on Soto to what extent and how much you thought that was reality. It's fine. But I think that to answer your question, the answer is both. And the reason I say both is because this is how you're able to do those sort of bigger deals is to manage it this other way, that you're able to get these guys under control because what you're betting on is that you're saving money for a team so that you can go out and actually use it for other things. Now, you know, it's interesting because the Devers deal, like, We can't definitively say, well, this is exactly the reason why they were able to get this Anthony deal done, because they have this Devers money. We can't say that. But I would imagine it can't hurt. And I would imagine the next level of that is beyond the extension. It is going into the offseason. And it should be. If they aren't players in the offseason, if they aren't players, whether it's trading for Joe Ron and tying him to an extension, whether it's going after a big free agent, Pete Alonso or someone like that, then shame on them, because this was how the Devers thing worked, along with freeing up spots in the lineup, along with taking flyers on a couple guys. How the Devers thing was working is that you get the money, much like back in 2012, you get the money for all those guys that went to the Dodgers. So to answer your question, how they're going to do things, you do these deals to do the biggest deals. Now they have to prove that they're going to get in that market.
I was listening to Sam Kennedy this morning on the Greg Hill Show, and he was really talking up just how aggressive Craig Breslow was at the deadline. And, man, you should have seen him, like all the stuff he was cooking up and how uncomfortable it was. Well, they didn't get really much of anything at the deadline, but are we supposed to feel good that Craig Breslow actually did a really good job and really was aggressive during the deadline that got you Dustin May and Steven Matz?
Yeah, well, so I think it's a couple ways to look at it. So number one, yeah, you know, I don't back off giving the C-. I studied really hard for tests before and still get a C-. Didn't make a difference, right? And so you still get a C-. And you know, you also, okay, you know, you tried really hard and you didn't get the job done. And that's the reality of that situation. Now, you know, with you guys, I've said a bunch of times leading up to the trade deadline, was they were going to be more motivated than the previous years. And I do think that's the case. Like, I honestly think that's the case. Now, where they should be criticized is that I think that they were too hyper-focused on these two guys, in Joe Ryan and Sandy Alcantara, and instead of, hey, you know what, we might want to gauge whether or not they're going to be actually available. And if they aren't going to be available, then use some of those assets to get the Merrill Kellys of the world. I think that's where they had a misstep. But, you know, in that last hour, I know for a fact, I mean, they, you know, some of the guys I'm in Worcester right now, some of the guys that I just interviewed, you know, Peyton Tolley, you know, you name it, they were putting them in packages. But the problem is that you did not ever get the feeling that the Minnesota Twins was going to back off of, hey, you know what? Just keep the offers coming because we're never going to say yes.
Okay, couple of questions. And it's Rob Bradford. You can check out what I thought was a great inside story of the trade deadline, a wild couple of days at Fenway Park, Odyssey app, WEEI.com. Bradfo, real quick, because I can't tell if I interpreted this correctly in the story. Do I have this right? In the room were Henry, Kennedy, Gordon, Epstein, and Breslow. All of them were there, or am I misinterpreting that?
And Cora, yes.
And Cora, we're all there. Oh, yeah, Cora was another big name, right. So they're all in there. Okay, so they're all there watching this happen. Fine, I just wanted to make sure I had that right. Second, you wrote that they were willing to include a combination of two of these three in deals, plus other guys in the top 10. Tolley, Password, and Arias. If they would have included all three and really gotten uncomfortable, would they have been able to land one of these cost-controlled pitchers?
We don't know that. And maybe it was worth finding out, but the fact is that from what I understand, Minnesota never said this is what it's going to take. In other words, they never got the word from Minnesota saying if you include all three of these guys in the same package, then we'll get the deal done. They never got that word. So you can maybe criticize them for not putting all three of those in them. I don't know. I mean, that's a lot, but you know, it's a lot as it is. And so I think that what I wrote and what I'm saying is that sort of along the lines of what Sam said, which is, yeah, you know what? Sure, they got uncomfortable, but really the problem was is that you got to read the room. You got to read like what your trade partner's doing. And this is why deals like this never get done at the deadline, because they don't have to do the deals. Now, you get to the offseason, it's different. But that was a reality, and that was maybe the criticism that they should have gotten at the deadline.
You know, that was another thing Sam said today, and he wouldn't specifically say Joe Ryan, but we all know who he was talking about, and he was talking about, you know, players under team control. But then he also referred to Garrett Crochet from a year ago, and you had told us that, you know, the White Sox wanted Roman Anthony and Marcelo Meyer. You're like, all right, okay, we're not doing that. But then in the offseason, they got him. He kind of alluded to the same thing with Joe Ryan. Do you think there'd be that's a possibility or a real possibility this offseason?
Oh, I don't think there's any question. I mean, whether or not – you know, Minnesota loosens it up and says, okay, now's the time to deal it. Here's the difference is that Minnesota also knows that there are only a few teams, maybe one or maybe two, maybe the Cubs and the Red Sox, who are willing to give these packages for Joe Ryan at this time of year. Where you get to the offseason, there's a whole lot more. Mm-hmm. They know that. So I think that that's what one of the things that Minnesota was banking on. But I think the Red Sox will be one of those teams. I don't think there's any question. I mean, we go all the way back for months now saying how much the Red Sox like Joe Ryan, and I think that sort of bore itself out in what they offered for him.
You had mentioned Peyton Tolley earlier. You're down in Worcester right now. What are the chances that he joins the big league roster at some point this season and maybe even in a playoff stretch?
Well, so you have these two guys, right? You have David Sandlin, who was just called up as well, and they immediately moved him to the bullpen. And the whole idea was we're moving them in the bullpen because this is the fast track. Peyton Tolley could be that guy too. Peyton Tolley probably has more upside than David Sandlin does. But right now he's starting, but that doesn't mean he's not going to be moved to the bullpen like in, you know, a couple weeks or something. But this is the type of guy, and I was just talking to him. I said, did you see that tweet from, I forget who it was from, but it said, your pitch, your fastball is graded out to be the best pitch in the entire minor leagues. And I'm like, I don't care what anyone says. Like, that's a pretty good thing. And so if you have that, all you can think about, guys, all I can think about is David Price back in 2008. Like, that was what he was, right?
Until Andrew Bailey gets a hold of him and is like, throw some of the soft stuff. Yeah, quit throwing heaters.
Well, he is working on a kick chain, so there you go.
Those guys could be a weapon. I remember even going all the way back to like K-Rod when K-Rod first debuted, sure. And you're just like, you bring this guy in, nobody's seen him before, and he's just throwing gas late in the game because another guy that throws
Crochet,
gas.
Didn't Crochet come up as a reliever?
Yeah, Crochet. Chris Sale's the guy pitched in the bullpen. Because it feels like Jordan Hicks may not be that guy.
Yeah.
He may not be the guy that you need late in the game.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're still sifting through this. Like, I was just talking to Bernardino, who's having a great year, right? He was sent down. I'm like, dude, like, you could be in October and all of a sudden be like, hey, there it is. You know, you're turning your whole season around. It's so bizarre how we perceive things now compared to how we perceive things even in October. I mean, I was talking when I had that conversation with Cora, who, by the way, again, acknowledge that he will be getting a baseballs and boring tattoo if you win the World Series. Thank you.
Very good.
Where's
the tattoo? Is the placement of the tattoo?
Did you narrow that down?
Is that decided by you or him?
No, I don't care. It doesn't matter to me.
But we care. Yeah, Let us know when it happens.
It's the same thing when you guys get yours. I don't care where you get it. So there you go.
My neck.
Your face. We talked about Joe Kelly. I said, thank you for making me a lot of money, because Joe Kelly wasn't going to make the 2018 postseason roster. And Alex Cora had to pound the table, said, I'm not leaving 100 miles an hour in the closet. I'm not putting him on the roster. But DeBrusque didn't want to put him on the roster. If he doesn't get on the roster, he doesn't get a 3-year deal with the Dodgers. He doesn't write a book. We're not getting tattoos. But my point is that this stuff can change so much in a hurry. But I'll come back to Tolley, man. You're right that we've had instances like this, and he has that image about him, the big guy with the fastball. It's the same image that David Price gave in 2008.
Okay. He's Rob Bradford, WEEI, and the Baseball Isn't Boring podcast. Check it out on the Odyssey app. Bradfo, as always, we appreciate the time. Thanks so much. Excellent stuff, and we'll talk to you next week.
Yeah, and I want to thank you guys, because you guys were the ones who broke the Roman Anthony news to me yesterday.
How about that?
I was sitting in my car. Yeah, it was great. I sprung into action, but
Did you like our immediate breakdown?
I got to be honest with you. When I'm sitting in my driveway and I heard it, I couldn't, I had to spring into action. You know how that works.
You didn't stick around for the analysis. Well, you missed some good stuff, Brad.
It was a good discussion.
There was only an Odyssey Rewind feature that I could go to. Thank you for that.
All right, Brad, good stuff. Talk to you next Thursday.
All right, see you. Bye.
All right, Rob Bradford.
How about that? Us breaking news to the baseball guy.
Yeah.
How do you like that?
Pretty good.
You always remember where you heard that news.
Yeah.
We were down at training camp.
The famous two words.
Yep.
Hell yeah, Keefe.
Hell yeah, Keefe. Put it on the t-shirt.
I mean, counting. Yep. Never really my strong suit.
No, it's okay.
It's Jones and Keefe on WEEI. We are presented by Jackson Lumber and Millwork. You can visit Jackson Lumber and Millwork for all your residential remodeling or commercial building materials and supplies at Jackson Lumber and Millwork, providing solutions and delivering results since 1946. I think there's interesting stuff there from Bradfo. He thinks they... contracts like this are going to allow them to spend on Alonso, trade for Joe Ryan and extend him, stuff like that.
That's wishful thinking.
He said if they don't, shame on them, which I would agree with. This should free them up to do that. He also confirmed they are not including three of their top prospects. They never asked Minnesota. Minnesota never told them that's what it would take. But they'll circle back to Joe Ryan in the offseason. That doesn't help the team this year.
No, it doesn't.
But that's something they may circle back to and lay some groundwork for. So some interesting stuff to pick through from Rob Bradford. We can do that. And let's get back to the Red Sox. 7-game win streak now over. Not a very good debut. Thank you. Not a very good debut for one of Craig Breslow's crown jewels at the trade deadline.
Two of the guys he traded for this year. Both were on full display last night.
Oh, you want to lump in Hicks,
too? Yeah, please. Yeah, These are his trades.
Let's get to both of them in the loss last night next.
WEEI Afternoons back here live, Fenway Park in our Ford Fenway Clubhouse studios with a couple special guests. Our buddy, Will Fleming, and I'll let you know in about 20 minutes what the other guy is to the show and to me. Apparently my nemesis over the weekend on social media, Jared Carrabas. Welcome. And I say that
with
all honesty.
Your name is Andy?
My name is Andy.
Okay. I'm just asking.
No, I know. I know you were confused. That's why I responded. Mm-hmm. I let you know who I was and why I was talking about you and all that. So
I didn't even hear it. To be honest, I'll be honest with you. I haven't heard it. I saw tweets about it. And what I said on the podcast last night was, it's not about who said it. It's the message that I've been hearing for a long time, and it's tired.
Okay.
I'm aggravated by it.
And what... So... Will, you want to step in because you are the TV guy?
You guys can do your thing.
Okay.
But I would just say this. So I've known now Jared for probably 3 years and as like a close friend of mine. And I think there is something of a misperception about what he does and what a lot of people in his world. First of all, I think he's as connected as anybody I know in the game. Really.
Okay.
And so I think that's probably what he's talking about, where like I hear stuff and I tell him what I just heard, and he goes, yeah, I heard that a week ago. So I think that's probably where he's coming from, is he works so hard to get sources, to know people with this team. He is connected. And I think that's probably just because he does a couple events on Nesson does not sort of, in my mind anyway, diminish how connected and by the way, he's willing to, if you do listen to what he says, he will rip people when needed.
Okay. Yep.
So it's not, yeah. The super fan thing, by the way, Nesson started that.
Which, ironically enough, it was a former Barstool employee that did that, and he was so sorry. But, yeah, I mean, so it's less to do with you. It's more to do that when I first started out here, that's what I had to deal with. It's like, who are you? You're just a fan. What do you know? What can you tell me that I don't already know? And the answer to that is more than you know, for sure. But I just think it's lazy to say that instead of being like, I could get to know this guy. I'm in Boston. I'm right down the street. So, okay. Yeah. I mean, but I'll put it this way. So Dan Shaughnessy was one of those guys that was like, who are you? Yep. What are you? Like, he went on your competing station, the Sports Hub, and he said, what does he know? He's not in the clubhouse. He's not in the dugout. And I said, it's at the time, 2016. We have cell phones. You don't have to be in the dugout every day to get information. But now I am in the dugout. Like, I am talking to these people all the time. And I will say this. I'm not a journalist. I don't pretend to be a journalist. If we get information, it's offered in an unsolicited manner. It's just people being like, hey, just want to keep you in the know on this so that when you have opinions that you can have correct opinions or you can have informed opinions. It's not like we're out here breaking news. We're not trying to do that. But it's my understanding that you said I wasn't connected on Joe Ryan.
No. So we actually went back. We couldn't find it because we weren't even sure whether it was Thursday or Friday.
Uh-huh.
But my presumption is, because I do remember talking about you and referencing it in a way, and I definitely said superfan.
Which
I've
is
seen
fine.
That commercial, the superfan.
Right, a thousand that's fine. Times. It's because that's our inside joke. But if I don't know you, then it comes across as an insult.
Right. But for me, as just a viewer, that's what I see of you.
Sure.
Right? A lot during Red Sox.
Fair.
And I don't have, Dan Ball is our producer and fill-in host. Hey. He's a big fan of yours, been a listener for a long time. And he generally brings Jared Carabas takes to the show. Oh, I was listening to the podcast. He says this, that kind of thing. So he keeps you in our world, so to speak. And I think he had said something about you believed it was at the 5-yard line. Something to that effect.
Yeah, through the stream that you guys were doing during the trade deadline,
yeah.
Seemed to get the kind of feel that it was very close to getting done.
And poor timing, I guess, on this interview. Passan confirmed that a couple hours ago.
Yeah. So, right. And part of this is the whole discussion, because I was reading The Athletic this morning. Their guy had a part one perspective. It never got close. It was last minute. All these different things. And as these stories always are, you get different sources, different reporters with different angles or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
So as we're piecing it together, I said something to the effect, and I don't know if this is how it was portrayed to you or not, was, you know, he works for Nesson, mm-hmm. because I lived that life. I worked for Patriots.com, Patriots Football Weekly. I lived that life of,
freelance gig for me, though. That's not my
No, I know. Piece. But you are on Nesson.
Correct.
And I do assume that Nesson has some input to a lot of people that collect paychecks from them in various ways.
Yeah.
And I think I said something for a guy who works for Nesson and is the self-proclaimed super fan.
Not self-proclaimed.
Okay. Well, whoever proclaimed you the super fan, we need to take some of it with a grain of salt or something. That maybe some of the information is from one side, or even propaganda is a strong word, but positive for the Boston Red Sox. Helps the Boston Red Sox with their story, narrative, whatever the hell they want to get out there. I think that's what I said. I don't know if that's what was portrayed to you or not.
Again, I did not hear the audio, but there was multiple people that were saying, like, speak with your chest like you did on the radio. And I was like, oh, so he kind of came at me pretty hard. But
I don't really know what that means. But yeah, I think I just told you what I said.
Yeah, in terms of,
was my chest out? Maybe, maybe not.
Maybe.
You guys both have big chests. I'm a little envious of both of you, to be honest.
Thank you.
I can co-sign that. Yeah. Yeah.
I think in terms of like the propaganda, I admitted everything that comes to me is from the Red Sox.
Right.
I'm not Ken Rosenthal. I'm not checking in with the Twins for their perspective. But I think when we're doing the podcast, we are entertainment. We get information. I don't go digging for it. I don't ask for it. When it comes across our dash, it's almost like I'll never hit you with the breaking news tweet, but we'll feed our audience information, because it's like, it's almost like this secret society. You listen to the podcast, you get to know stuff a week before the other guys get it and they put it out. It's not a cop out to be like, I'm not a journalist. if we get it wrong, but I knew that the Joe Ryan stuff was correct. And I had to sit there and take it for a week while, you know, different shows. I mean, I know that they're doing it on the Sports Hub today. Like, they're running, they're playing the audio. Oh, he got it wrong. They weren't even close. Passan comes and he's like, listen, they were actually close. Yeah. So we have to, but there's never any accountability for that. It's like, we'll trash you because we think that you're wrong. But when you're proven correct a few days later, it's like, ah, let's move on. Let's move on, actually.
Right. Yeah. Right. I find that to be really weird in our media ecosystem. It's like these articles get written where, and I told all you guys months ago, they coveted Joe Ryan. They want him. And by the way, I've had conversations that I will never share with anybody on the record that prove that it was very close to getting done. Mm-hmm. It just was. And so, you know, whether it's Bob Nightingale or anybody else, the idea that it was quote unquote feeble or that they didn't engage is just ludicrous.
It's disingenuous.
It is.
Yeah. And so I think when you tie the pieces together, because again, I'm not talking to anyone on the Twins side of things, but if the Red Sox feel like, hey, we almost got this thing done, and then the Twins are saying they barely even tried, that just says to me the Twins never really had any intent. They were just, they were stringing the Red Sox along. They were saying, let's see how far they'll go. If they do something crazy, we'll say yes.
Right.
But we want to gauge what the interest is.
So I think I should. So my general perspective on everything is believe everything and believe nothing. That's how I approach everything. Like, there could be some truth to every rumor I hear, every report I hear, and there also could be falsehood to every report. Like, the example in my world was Adam Schefter saying the Patriots won't trade Jimmy Garoppolo for 4 first round picks. And then a couple months later, they trade him for a second round pick. It's like, that was clearly manipulated information that was put out by the Patriots for purposes that they knew. So I always have this skeptical view. I think the thing that set me up, so I was, earlier I told the story, I was driving back from New Hampshire, I dropped my son off, boom, all of a sudden my phone starts blowing up. It's like John Lyons, Paul Perillo, Mike Giardi, all these guys are like, making friends again, what the hell did you do this time? Why is he all pissed at you? And I'm like, what? And I look at it and it was, so the only thing that annoyed me is, and you saw my response, you asked who I was and why I was talking about you. So I said, it's Andy Hart and it's part of my job, was like sort of that passive aggressive Kobe, do I know you, man? Do I know you? Because it's 2025. And if you wanted to know who I was, you could have said, you know, Grok or ChatGPT or typed in who's Andy Hart or whatever. So like, I'm here 3 days a week, 2 days a week at Fenway. It is what it is. That was the only thing that annoyed me. Was like sort of that condescending, like, who the bleep are you kind of thing.
Well, that just goes to show that you don't know me either, because
I don't.
I went to the All-Star game and we interviewed Garrett Crochet, to where I said, I don't know who Future is, the rapper. I did not know any of his songs.
He was shocked.
I don't either.
Yeah, so I'm pretty just not locked in on things.
Okay.
I don't do sports radio. Like, I'm on the Baseball Hour, but I don't listen to sports radio anymore because I don't want sports radio takes to get in my brain and then tweak my opinions. So I don't listen. Like, it's, I'm sure it's taken as a slight, sure, but I genuinely just, I don't listen. I don't do other people's podcasts and et cetera.
Genuinely didn't, then Google it. That's what, you know, like, if I don't know somebody, like if I were going to do an interview with the Future, I'd be like,
I'll put it back to you. Google it. Google me. And then you would find out, oh, this guy actually does know his stuff.
No. He tells me that. That's where we go.
Right.
Dan Ball's a fan. But I also, it's funny because Dan has this theory. We talked about this coming in. He has this theory that you and I are more similar than we probably would want to admit in our, well, I don't even know how you put it, takes, styles, makeup,
you guys
energy.
You guys are both clearly very knowledgeable in your independent windows and avenues. And I think you guys are both very confident in the information you have. And I think it was two confident individuals who might be differing on this. That might be a little too generic, but.
Okay.
I think there's more that you have, like, personality wise, just in the pride and the work that you do, than maybe kind of got lost in this.
Yeah, I think we're passionate people who he loves baseball. I came up in the world of football and love football, worked my way up, whatever. And I think there's probably some truth to that. But that was my just like, or at me. You know, that's the modern thing. Like, oh, if you want to go at somebody, right? Like, Will, when you were mad at me, you added me.
I told you to go F yourself.
You did, and you added me when you told me to go F yourself. So there's a little something there, I guess.
I didn't. By the way, that was not directed at you.
Ish.
It's not.
We did find that out after the fact.
Isn't there hypocrisy in saying at me when you were talking about me on here, but never? No one here reached out saying, hey, do you want to, like, come on and talk about this?
I'll be honest. I didn't think that was an option. I thought you had
commitments that would prevent such a thing.
And here we are.
You're welcome anytime you want. You want to talk baseball? Like, I think we have a great relationship with the manager. I think we do interviews with him. I think we've garnered a nice relationship rapport with him. So anytime we are here 2-3 times a week in this studio, that door is always open for you. If you got a problem with something I say, come on down. And if Dan brings some of your, because I also do the same thing you do. I try not to listen to too much because to me you end up snaking takes or whatever the hell they want to call it, and it influences you. I'd rather just come on here and pop off at the mouth with what I think, and every once in a while Will gets mad at me.
I do, and then I just walk in here. I have learned that. He says stuff about me that pisses me off, and it is
just come in and we'll talk about it. Let's go. That's what I do. Like, it's an open door policy, because I also just think you do podcasts, you do TV, you do whatever. If you're in the public spectrum talking opinions, whatever, about other people sometimes too, right? Like, you're not the only one whose opinion I'll criticize. It might be Bob Nightingale. It might be Adam Schefter. It might be whoever.
And nobody gets criticized more than the people on his own show.
That is true. Or the person right here, if you ever go to the internet, like, hot takes. Tom Curran called me, what, wrongheadedness radio? Because I think the Patriots O-line stinks. Stinks. Flat out stinks.
I think
we have to be able to take it, I guess.
No doubt. I have no issue with... Like, if you wanted to bring up something that I said, it was more just the central message was lazy. It was lazy and it was ignorant.
But don't we all have biases? So do you say you have unlimited, non-biased information and viewpoints at all times?
Oh, I'm incredibly biased towards the Red Sox.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's something there. Whereas, like, we have a thing. I love Cora. I have grown to love him more the more I talk to him on a weekly basis. Part of it was because Bill Belichick was an a-hole to interview for 20 years. Now I talk to a guy who'll actually answer the question, acknowledge the topic. And now when we say stuff, boom, 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 whether it's Twitch, whatever, oh, you guys are never going to criticize him because he's in every Wednesday at 2:30, or Brian Scalabrine. He says we for the Boston Celtics. So, like, people think he has a certain bias from NBC Sports Boston. We're on the flagship station. You're on the flagship station.
Yep.
You're on Nesson. Hell, ESPN is buying NFL Network. So I'm going to be like, is ESPN covering the NFL anymore? Or are they in business with the... It's modern media, I guess I would say, is trying to sift through the biases in this business. And that's what I try to do. Because I try to know, am I being bamboozled? I'm not smart enough to do it with politics or finance or any of those things.
Yeah.
But I've been around sports long enough that sometimes you can kind of sniff out where's the information coming from and who benefits from that information being portrayed in a certain way.
Sure. And I think when you look through our track record, it's usually never wrong, just early. That's been the MO. So,
you know what's crazy? That Ryan thing drives me bleeping crazy.
Because this would have been avoided if they had just gotten Joe Ryan.
Because all of us, I mean, look, you've got great sources. I have sources that I trust very much.
Yep.
And we both heard it almost the exact same time. Like, this thing is happening. Like, everyone in the room is going, they're about to do this thing. And if he's biased, I'm biased. Like, of course you hear me do the games.
Right.
I want the Red Sox to win. And they're better off, I'm better off when they win. And if they have Joe Ryan, I think they're a favorite to win the American League. So, like, we're all invested in the idea that, like, holy smokes, this is about to go down right now. And it was crazy. With the sort of benefit of time, I think what happened is they got caught up with Griffin Jackson, Duran, and all these other people, and just didn't, frankly, have the time to finalize the deal. And maybe the Red Sox needed to pivot and do other things. But I'm with you 100%. I know 100% truth is that, like, they were close. And anybody who says they weren't is just not telling the truth. And they have their own agenda. They've got their own thing going on. They wanted him. They want him. They were close. And I don't think anybody who said that necessarily, myself included, is working any kind of angle or agenda.
So, Jared, before we wrap this up, we're coming up on a break here. Final word, where are we? Do I need to look around the corner when I walk out here? You're going to Nancy Kerrigan me?
That's a hell of a reference.
Anya!
No, we can shake hands and we can move on.
Okay.
Yeah.
We friends now? You friends of the show? Like, we ended the Will feud. Friends of the show? Are you welcome anytime? You're going to stop by again? Like,
Ted's a big fan. Yeah, I met him.
I haven't heard Ted say that. I'm going to ask him.
A couple weeks ago, shook my hand. Big fan.
Okay.
So for him, anything.
Last time I came on here and had a beef, a Hall of Famer started cursing at me. So you get Will Clark.
Will Clark.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we started that feud, too. We tend to start feuds on here. I don't know how that happens.
Yeah, it's weird.
I wonder where that
we
comes from.
We stumble into them somehow. But okay, so you're welcome. You're welcome anytime here. And if you have a problem, I guess just say, who is Andy Hart? And I'll reply to the tweet again, and we'll go off on our separate ways.
Beautiful. God bless Will Fleming, the mediator of the year.
Can Joe Ryan be the Red Sox next year?
I feel like we made no progress.
This winter, I think we revisit Joe Ryan.
So?
Yeah, I think we revisit Joe Ryan this winter, maybe if we don't sign Framber Valdez.
You know what drives me crazy is that people, I come on here and make all these predictions, and I said they were going to make big changes. They traded Devers, right? And then I said they're going to do big things at the deadline and in the offseason. I'm all in on that again. They're going to do more stuff.
So like, Valdez, did you notice how he slipped that in there? He told me
they're
not wrong early. Mason Miller, 2 years down the road.
How about both of them? How about Fromber and Joe Ryan and a couple duck quotes in a row? What do you think?
I believe our manager said it's time to get greedy. Did he not say that?
He did.
Yeah.
Greed is good.
All right, Will Fleming, appreciate you playing the diplomatic whatever, Trump. Non-Trump, whatever it
don't
was.
Don't ever do that again. don't do that again.
Jared, appreciate you coming down. Appreciate you not hitting me wherever we were going on social media. We're in the same room now. And friend of the show, welcome anytime. You can come see Ted, and I'll just also be in the room with you, all right?
Perfect. I love that. As long as Will Fleming's here.
All right.
That's it.
Perfect. WEEI Afternoons here at Fenway Park. We'll be back in a minute.
Jones and Keith, final hour, WEEI, live from Patriots training camp. We are presented by McFarland Energy, the heating, cooling, and bioheat delivery pros that Eastern Mass and all of Cape Cod depend on. McFarlandEnergy.com. If you're watching twitch.tv/BostonWEEI, you see Tom E. Curran rocking out there to the white stripes. Curran is who?
Oh, white stripes.
Not
white
black, stripes. Not the black keys. Yeah, you know, you're right around
purple
it.
Haze.
So we saw a light walkthrough today. We got joint practices tomorrow. So we've seen quite a bit to this point in training camp. We were playing a clip earlier from EEI Afternoons. Mike Giardi gave his grade on Drake May through 11 practices. How would you answer that question? How would you grade Drake May to this point?
B plus. And I'm sure that, you know, we have a tendency, I think, in the media to start grading relative to what you are seeing most recently. And I keep looking at May, and he had two picks on Friday. One ricocheted off of
Diggs,
and the other one was just sat on by Alex Austin, a bad pick. But to me, first year, new offense. He's taken unbelievably good care of the football. He's thrown it into trouble. He's had command. He's been accurate. He's been a good leader. Easily a B-plus to me.
Who's been their best offensive player so far, like if you're adding it all up?
Him and Douglas have been their two best offensive players, I think.
So the wide receiver room, obviously, we were looking at going in, and Steph Diggs, I think, really answered the first question right off the rip. He's healthy. So that was really good. And then as you work your way down the depth chart a little bit, Mac Hollins has been out there for a little bit of stuff, but he's going to be on the team. Kyle Williams is going to be on the team because he was a third-round pick. Kayshon Booty is another name, I would say, Tom, that we've heard a lot of. He's just been consistent, he and Pop Douglas. But then where does that leave a guy like Kendrick Bourne, who I know is banged up now? Baker's actually flashed a little bit more than certainly Polk or Chisholm has. How do you handicap the receiver room right now?
I would say that going in inverse order.
Yes.
My guy Efton.
No, it's not happening.
Oh, no.
Then
he had a nice catch yesterday.
Well,
yeah, he's also had a drop at the back of the end zone, and he didn't look good Friday night. He'll be on the practice squad. Then Jalen Polk. So Chisholm, Polk. I mean, Bourne and Baker are now neck and neck for that next spot, I think.
Wow.
And Booty's pretty safe. Then Hollins, Williams, Douglas, Diggs. But, I mean, I think that Booty and Bourne were in competition, and Booty has just established himself as
You think they're keeping six? And Baker and Bourne, if I'm not to put words in your mouth, but I think if I'm doing the math right, you think they're keeping six, and Bourne and Baker are kind of duking it out for that spot?
I think that if I handicap the whole thing, and I'd have to do all 53 guys, Jonesy, but if I had to say that's the order of the guys, and I think that Bourne and it's going to come down to a veteran guy who's over 30, who is productive but doesn't play any special teams against a second-round pick last year who occasionally looks pretty good.
Fourth-round pick, though, right? You're talking about Baker.
Yeah,
Baker.
Oh, excuse me. Yes. And so, Polk's behind those two.
So with Polk, is that like a change of scenery guy, or is that a practice squad? Like, does the league look at him like, hey, he was a second-round pick a year ago and take a chance, or are they just like, yeah, we saw what it looked like, and they have no interest. Like, it'll what's really, his fate?
I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. I mean, the Patriots have divorced themselves from second-round picks in the past. Yeah. I think Duke Dawson went over to Denver and didn't do diddly. Mm-hmm. A lot of D's in that sentence.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how Jalen Polk – I mean, word spreads.
Anything.
Word spreads quickly around the league. As what went wrong?
If I were him, though, and I had a chance to go on like a practice squad here or elsewhere, I'd be like –
go somewhere.
No, yeah, I would
change the scenery.
So my guess is if they cut him, he wouldn't be bad. It's just a complete guess. But my guess is that's how that would go down. I don't want to spoil early edition tonight. You're going to be on early edition tonight, Curran, Breck. And I believe you guys are going to be discussing and looking forward to joint practices and the preseason game. I don't know how much you expect Drake May to play in the preseason game. If the offense struggled, and you just said – arrow down at the scrimmage, big time arrow down yesterday at the end of practice. The offense really struggled without Gonzalez, without Carlton Davis out there yesterday. If the offense continues to struggle, who are we going to blame?
Depends on what it looks like, and I'm going to give a little pushback. I mean, when you say really struggled, there were no picks. There were well-defended plays.
Yeah, but who was out there on defense?
Guys, it's a bunch of NFL football players, so they didn't have the secondary. Two starting corners.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's red zone. I mean, look, it's just not the catastrophe that people are conflating it into Friday and Monday.
Let me finish. But it wasn't good.
It wasn't good, okay, but it was kind of a fair fight out there. It's not like, my God, they don't know how to line up or complete a pass. I mean, they did not convert. Big flipping deal. People, what's wrong with you? Put yourself together.
I'm just saying, if it looks like that, who do we blame?
There's no blame delay in that. That's the other team playing good. So I would, if it looks like that, I'll say Washington got the better of them on a few plays. But I think in the overall,
for those that are listening on the radio and not watching on Twitch,
I'm in a good mood.
He's got his paws all over Jones now. I'm very uncomfortable with all of it. But you're so no blame is
most of New England has been uncomfortable with you for going on friggin' 13 years.
But you're saying that no blame to hand out then if they look like that against the Commanders.
Look, maybe I'm a softy. I just think that looks like football.
I was. One team is not, on my shoulder.
One team is not getting rototilled. The offense wasn't getting rototilled. Yeah. The defense wasn't. So to me, it was kind of a fair fight. If it looks bad tomorrow, I would first look at the protection that Drake May's getting. Because to me, to cut to the chase, I think most people are going to say, well, Jaden Daniels is in. Drake May is competing against him. If he looks bad, people say, oh, Drake's down. I look more at... we will take a hit as a group who have said that this offense has improved and the offensive line has improved. Our contentions would take a significant knock if Drake May is scurrying around and throwing into coverage and off one foot and having to get flushed out of the pocket. That would be a Josh McDaniels and an offensive line issue greater than Drake May. So that, to me, is the most critical. It has to look better up front and with their answers at the line of scrimmage than it has in the last 2 years.
Well, jumping off of that, just Will Campbell, what have you thought so far a couple weeks into camp?
Same thing that I – same excuse making. We're going to do the same excuse making for him.
That's fine.
He's just getting beat occasionally. He's not getting absolutely undressed on a regular basis, but I'm looking at, okay, it's his first camp. Mm-hmm. It's 2 weeks in, but this is critical. Look, I would imagine he's going to get beat some one-on-ones by some Washington guys. Von Miller is there, I think.
Yes.
Right?
So, yeah. Dietrich Wise.
Dietrich Wise, he's got big foot. The biggest feet. His feet are like scuba fins.
Really? He's probably a good swimmer.
Biggest feet.
We should have asked all the Patriots feet Monday question. And Friday questions. We never got to his feet.
No, we didn't get there.
This year was the year too.
Yeah.
But I think that he really is going to be tested because he's gotten used to Keon White and he's gotten used to Kalyvon Chaisson and Swinson. So now he's going to see some different guys. He's going to get beat. How does he look in the 11-on-11s? I don't care about the one-on-ones, especially, you know, the individual offensive line and especially the receivers on corners. It's just not a fair fight with going one-on-one, I think, because you have the whole room to run through if you're a receiver. But the 11-on-11 matters more.
And it's Tommy Curran, joins us every Tuesday here on Jones and Keefe. He joins WEEI Afternoons every Thursday. You told Afternoons a few weeks back, and you were like, look, I'm not saying these guys are getting cut. I'm not saying they're in jeopardy. But if I had to estimate a couple of surprise out-of-nowhere cuts, some names I would highlight are Kyle Duggar and Ramondre Stevenson. Stevenson put a ball on the ground on Friday night in the scrimmage. Duggar was losing some reps yesterday to Woodson, the fourth-round rookie out of Cal. How do you feel about their roster security through 11 training camp practices?
I think Stevenson is more than safe. He's a lock. And I mentioned Onwenu too because of the massive cap hits that both guys are carrying. You have a guard who is, you know, played last year, is about the 15th to 20th best guard in the league, and he's making a massive amount of money. And the same thing with Duggar, making $14.5 million. And he had a poor year last year, and he's kind of not been very present and obvious in this one. He's out there, but it's a lot of money to spend to a player of less than significant consequence. It's like four times what you would pay for a, you know, basically a replacement level player. So to me, it remains something worth watching. I think that they, you know what, I can't even say that. I know that Mayo loved him. I know the 2022, he was one of the better safeties in the league. I always thought that he and Peppers together would comprise an excellent safety pairing, but it's just been a little bit since Kyle Duggar played like a rising player.
What about some of the other teams around the league surprising cuts? Should the Patriots be aggressive in, I mean, they have all that cap space everybody points to. Should they be looking around the league on like, all right, what's going to get peeled loose for whatever reason and try to add to this roster more?
Yeah, if you get a guy like Duggar, and it would be difficult to trade him because he did not have a great year in 23, and he's not doing much right now, so you know, it's hard to move that contract, but I would be scouring for trade opportunities, say with a Kendrick Bourne perhaps, to maybe get back a depth left tackle so that you don't have to have Vidarian Lowe as your first answer there or Marcus Bryant. So to me, I would look at the tackle class and try and either make a deal with someone like a Bourne or maybe even a Polk, the same way they did with Philip Dorsett with the the Colts way back when.
Yep, Brissett.
So that, to me, would make a lot of sense to try and find those places where you have useful players. Like Kendrick Bourne's a useful guy. He just got – that sucks for him that he got tackled the other day. It sucks for the team, too, because if you wanted to move on from him and send him someplace, it's kind of hard to do at the moment.
What are you looking for at joint practices tomorrow, or maybe who specifically are you going to have your eyes on at joint practices tomorrow? We get a new team in, a new way to measure up some of these players, as you mentioned earlier. So who are you going to have your eyes on?
Defensive line pressure. Can Harold Landry, Keon White, Milton Williams, Christian Barmore, those guys create some pressure up front? Kalavon Chaisson, can they move Jaden Daniels around? Secondary, and it's tough, but okay, well, how is that cornerback depth? How does that look going against those guys? Duggar, I'd like to see something from him. So that's your defensive guys I would look to. I'm really concerned with the pass rush because it's been non-existent. And then offensively, offensive line, Campbell, Moses, how do they hold up? Does May have time? I think I'm intrigued to watch how Travion Henderson is used and how he plays, but I don't have any doubts that he'll be useful. So I'm less concerned with the running back group. And then Diggs, does he take full part in it? And I would imagine Diggs and Douglas are going to get the lion's share.
I know they said it was dehydration for Terrell Williams yesterday, and it was, you know, he's fine, and he's back out there today. But, man, it's only been a couple of months, and we've already had some scares with him. I mean, I don't know what the concern level is in-house and sort of what the – does that mean Mike Vrabel takes over play calling if there's a, you know, a game day situation? But, like, how much of a concern is the Terrell Williams just health status right now?
Yeah, and it's certainly newsworthy because of – look, it's a – it's a team that generates public interest, and everybody's major priority, whether it's the team itself, ownership, the players, the media who doesn't know him very well, you hope he's okay. Is there a point at which they have to say, look, this is taxing as hell. You're standing on a 90-degree field. You're coming back from whatever it is we still don't know that you dealt with. Would it be better if you went on a little hiatus? And I'm sure that would be something that he's not psyched about because he's looked and waited and hoped for this opportunity. But the Patriots will need to have Zach Kerr be standing by, I would imagine, the defensive coordinator, the linebackers coach who worked as defensive coordinator throughout OTAs and picked up a lot of that responsibility yesterday. But it's one of those, it's almost trite because it's obvious.
Yeah.
You hope he's okay.
Yeah.
And then the other stuff is secondary, but it is noteworthy because there are 26 guys who play defense that you need to coach.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned if he had to take a leave of absence, and you're not saying that's the case, but just in a scenario where he needs to take a step back for his own health, I think we would all understand that, obviously. Would that fall to Vrabel to take on more of a hand on the defensive side of the football? This is something we were talking about earlier. He's been very involved with Drake May in the offense over on this field. Typically, I'd say more of his time has been spent over there. Not all of it,
mm-hmm.
but more of his time has been spent over there. If he were to be away from the team for whatever reason, would it be incumbent on Vrabel to move and focus more on that side of the ball? And how would that impact the team top to bottom?
Yeah, it probably would mean that Mike would spend more dedicated time there, the same way when the offensive line was missing Adrian Clem. Bill Belichick helped out a little bit more there. And, you know, with quarterbacks way back in 2001 when Dick Rabine sadly passed away, Belichick was involved there. Vrabel had an interesting nugget Friday night at our press conference. He was asked by Greg Bedard, why are you spending so much time with the offense? It's like, because I don't know it. I'm trying to learn it inside and out so that I can answer questions and come up with, you know, diagnoses of my own. So he would be, not saying he's not contributing there, but he's more coming up to speed on that, whereas he could flip into the defense of being in a teaching spot right away.
Vrabel was asked if Drake May was going to play on Friday in the first preseason game. He did give you an answer, which is fine, but do you think that he will, or do you think that he should?
I think that he will. I think that he should. I would be surprised if he doesn't, but not jaw-droppingly so. It'll depend how many reps he gets tomorrow because, you know, we're probably not going to see Ben Woodridge much.
No. He might get a lot of preseason time, though.
Yeah.
No. I guess on Friday he gets a lot of run, probably less so tomorrow. Do you think, and again, I don't know if it's a series or two, but do you think guys like Diggs, even Morgan Moses, like how much do you expect to see those guys Friday, or is that more get your reps in a joint practice setting than a preseason?
That's a good question on Moses. They've been managing him so much at 34 years old that maybe they don't ask him to put on the duds and get out there and run around just for effect. But I do think that this organization and this franchise is in a spot right now where it does need to do some outreach to its fans. It does need to, whether it's ownership or Mike Vrabel, show its fans that, hey, we know you came down here, you sat in traffic, you're sitting in the stands. We're not just going to give you Ben Woodridge for 3 hours and then send you on your way. Here's Drake May. Watch him for two snaps.
Yeah.
He's going to throw the ball three times and then get the hell out. And are you going to put him at risk just to make the fans happy? He'll be fine. He'll be fine.
You give any chance at all of Terry McLaurin leaving the Commanders and joining the Patriots?
I would say 0.01. Right.
Okay.
Well,
okay.
I can't do it. I can't say zero.
You can't. NFL guys move all the time. I appreciate that. Yeah. I like that. In your experience, do you think he'll even be here? Like, do you think he'll physically be here tomorrow?
Oh, that's a good question. Yes, unless they've gotten to a point where they're saying, well, Terry, we don't want you around. Kind of one of those TO situations where, you know, you're stinking up the room with your presence.
Keep those binocs handy.
I'll have my binocs ready. I'll be looking for Terry McLaurin.
But
that's for sure.
The idea that a Final Four team in the Commanders would,
this is what I think,
cut off its nose to spite its face
to re-sign him.
After decades of stinking the way they did.
He has a lot of leverage. If he wants the DK Metcalf contract, he's got a lot of leverage to get it because they need him.
Yeah, the notion that Phil makes this point a lot too, Phil Perry, is he didn't really play until his junior year at Ohio State and then senior year redshirt, so he does not have the mileage on him that people presume he does.
The Micah Parsons situation, what do you think about he stays in Dallas? That's getting entertaining to watch.
That's getting a lot more venomous.
Yeah, it is.
It really does show Jerry Jones, as he ages, his willingness to speak more and more frankly.
Yeah.
To the point of...
Good way of putting it.
I mean, to the point of really articulating some old school mentalities on a regular basis that are probably best left to the old school.
And then
he's getting close.
I don't even know. I should probably track this better. Jerry Jones not paying Micah Parsons somehow led to a Dez Bryant Nicki Minaj beef. You follow this on Twitter?
It was inevitable.
But it's a good point.
It was like bizarre because Dez jumped in on Jerry Jones, and the next thing you know, he's like feuding with her, and there's like a lot of all caps tweets. It's like, I'm like, I don't know, I can't follow any of this. But it's because of Jerry Jones.
Ooh, that sounds like a segment tomorrow.
Yeah.
This should have occurred to me earlier, but we got the Brady unveiling of the statue on Friday as well. What do you expect out of that? Brady's going to be there, right?
As far as I know.
That's the, yeah. I mean, that's the Patriots put that in a press release. He's going to be there answering questions, I thought.
Yeah, go with that then.
Interesting. You hear anything?
We should do be it. Good.
What,
we do it.
Well, what, well, what
have you seen this thing?
No, have you been one of the few guys to see the statue?
Have you heard anything about
it? I think Tom has. He's doing a weird no. He's shaking no.
No, I haven't.
I think he has.
No, he went to Tampa. We were fine for a while. I talked to his dad. He said damn rights. And then Tom was like, you know what?
I do remember that. We still play the damn rights.
You were calling in the heavy rotation.
I'm pissed at you. All right, Tom.
Okay.
All so, right. No, I'm not on the inside.
So, you don't know, like, what
I don't know if you saw the statue.
You don't know if the statue.
I haven't.
It's okay. going to be like sure. a let's go or him, you know, with his hands on his face after he won the first Super Bowl. Like, what? You don't know what it's going to be? Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
My favorite would be the Sports Illustrated cover where he's wearing the long Sportsman of the Year one.
Yeah.
I like that one.
Okay.
I like that one.
All right.
Nice statue.
One vote for that. It's a little late to get your vote in, but that's a good vote.
He is Tom.
The best.
He is Tommy Curran. NBC Sports Boston. Check him out on Early Edition tonight. He's here
every
Tuesday.
I'm not on tonight. I thought I would be.
Oh, you thought you said you were talking about
that. I thought I would be. Well, no, I was on the email.
No, not tonight.
I was on the email, and then they said, you know what? You're liberated.
Yeah, they're like, you gave it all away on John the Keefe today. We don't need
don't
you.
Do that.
Okay. Well, anyway, you can check him out all over NBC Sports Boston here on Tuesdays with Jones and Keefe, Thursdays with WEEI Afternoons. And, well, thank you for following through and showing up today, unlike some other guests who were scheduled to be here earlier in the program today.
Did you tell the people about it?
We did. We saw
several
minutes
yes,
on
yes,
it.
Yes, yes, yeah. I'd say we spent the bulk of a good chunk of a segment on
did
that.
Did you send out a poll as to whether or not, and I'm sure the most people who would respond to the poll would say, yeah, you should have done that.
We should have just blindsided him.
Yeah.
Just a bunch
hey,
of
Mike, how's the book? Questions. How's Bill like it? Speaking of Bill.
No, we should do it.
Would you have done the same thing as us, Tom? Like, if they're like, hey, quick slants, you can have Lombardi on, but zero Belichick. You can't mention Belichick.
You know what? I don't think so at this stage of my career.
Yeah.
You know, my rabble-rousing days are kind of behind me a little bit.
Yeah.
Oh, same.
Got it.
That's actually him saying we should have done it.
But you guys
could have needled them.
He's actually saying we should have
done it. You guys could have roused some rabble there.
Okay. Fair enough.
I mean, like, you have to figure to yourself, okay, what's this going to cost me down the road in terms of Mike Lombardi access?
Yeah.
Well, it costs us that.
Blood from a stone.
Yeah. True.
Yeah. Touche. All right. Well, Curran, good stuff as always. You can check it out once it's up there shortly on the Odyssey app. Billy Lanny with all the latest in trending. And when we come back, it's time for Grab Bag.
In a world where sports talk is never enough, where the unexpected lurks around every commercial break, two voices dare to break the rules. Jones, Keefe. When the clock hits 1:30, logic ends. And chaos begins. It's not news. It's not sports. It's something in between. This is Grab Bag. Grab Bag. Only on WEEI. You never know what's coming next.
You're listening to WEEI Afternoons with Hart, Fitzy, and Johnson.
What we do is not wrong with that rejoin. WEEI Afternoons at Fenway Park, but we are transitioning to a little football talk here with our favorite guest. We had to bump him on Friday as we all bitched about the Red Sox, but Mike Giardi was at Patriots season ticket holder practice on Friday. He's been there all weekend, so the best phone interview talking football in the business, Mike Giardi.
It's time for Mike Giardi.
Stink, stank, and stunk.
The bulging in his disc in his back. The bulging disc in his back.
What do you gain by keeping Bill Belichick around?
I want to see as much Drake May as possible.
Angry Giardi is here.
Wiggy appears to have a bit of a man crush on Cam.
I don't know if you want to take the cheese again.
Mike Giardi, folks, is an angry man.
I'm not pissed today.
I've got you by at least 2 inches.
On Boston Sports Original, WEEI.
Michael, how we doing?
I'm still recovering from being bumped. Still recovering, you know. It was a hurtful thing that you did there, and I don't know. We'll see. We'll see how this interview goes today.
We wanted you to get to practice earlier and be able to take in all the sights and sounds. And we really didn't need like another voice bitching about the Red Sox. So that's true.
And Andy's been big on making friends the last couple of days. So that's also where we're at.
I've noticed that.
Let's start with something a little serious before we get into just the football stuff. You know, I've had my questions about Terrell Williams and his status. And from what I saw on Twitter today, he unfortunately may have passed out, was carted off. What do we know about Terrell Williams, his health and his status from today?
They're saying it was dehydration and that he's fine. So we'll have to take them at their word on that. Obviously, he's had a tough, whatever, 4 or 5 months here from a physical standpoint, not being able to be with the team during the spring sessions because of whatever the medical thing that popped up was that kept him in Detroit. And now this. So, I mean, it's certainly something that bears watching. I know the guys talk about him. They're thrilled to have him around. He brings a good energy, at least in the meeting rooms. It's hard to see on the field because he's not moving very much on the field. He doesn't move very well to begin with. And so he's off to the side calling plays, but sort of almost removed from the group a little bit.
Mike, I don't ever want to be accused of leading the witness, so I'm going to ask you a very simple, open-ended question. How do you feel about the Patriots' offensive line right now?
So look, I'm not where you were, where you got yelled at last week by Tom Curran.
Yeah, wrong-headedness, he said. Worse. Wrong-headedness, that was bullying.
Yes, it was bullying, and I've been on that side of it too with him. But I will say that there are a lot of questions and concerns. I mean, you're getting excited about the idea of having, you know, what Jared Wilson has done is ascending into the starting lineup as a rookie at left guard. And then you realize you're playing him next to a rookie left tackle. Generally in the NFL, from a history perspective, teams don't do this by choice. Now, is this hey, these guys are worth it, and you're going to look back on it and go, unbelievable, this is awesome, this couldn't have worked out any better? I mean, that's your hope. But in general, I don't think that was the master plan to say, hey, let's put two rookies side by side and see what happens.
How about that rookie left tackle? Have you seen growth day over day? Where would you say he is at since the beginning of camp?
So I would say he's been better in team periods than he has been in the one-on-ones. But then, you know, I say better. So I think he's an above-average run blocker already. I think you see the skills, the athletic skills, the movement, his feet, his power. Which again, some people think he's a guard down the line, and maybe you're starting to see some of that stuff when it comes to blocking. When it comes to pass blocking, it's a mixed bag. You know, he got beat today by Keon White down in the red zone in 11-on-11, and then other times held his own. I think generally when you look at the history of the league, guys don't really step in at left tackle and be awesome right away. I mean, there are obviously examples of them, of guys doing that, but in general, it's a position that you have to grow. And I think he's going to be, obviously, never mind the physical things that we've talked about from way back in, you know, January and February, but there's other parts of the game that he's going to be challenged as well, and we'll see how he responds to that.
A lot of people wrote about and talked about the interceptions from Drake May on Friday night in the practice because he had previously not thrown any. That is not what jumped out to me in terms of turnovers. It was a fumble. It was Ramondre Stevenson. And I'm wondering, is that a guy that should be worried about his roster spot? If he's picking up where he left off a year ago, putting the ball on the ground, isn't that bad for job security?
So it's definitely not good for job security. And he talked about it today with us. And said essentially, I know that, you know, like that this can't happen and that, you know, hopefully I'm getting the mistake out of my system now and that I have a clean slate when it comes to the regular season. But he has, the last 2 years, has not been their best back. You know, it was Antonio Gibson last year, pretty much for the entirety of the second half of the year, was the better running back. And people kind of forget the year before, Ezekiel Elliott was actually the better running back, you know, especially in the second half of the year as well. So to me, I think there's a lot of talent there. I love the way he runs, the physical nature in which he runs. But if he's not going to be able to hang on to the football, you drafted Trevion Henderson in the second round, and Gibson has proved that, like, he can handle a decent workload. So, yeah, I would say, there's a little bit of pressure on him to make sure that goes away. That said, Andy, I'm still in favor of keeping all three. Like, I just think injuries happen at that position. So, you know, I know they could save some money or whatever. But, like, who cares? Like, he's still one of your best 53. Figure it out.
J- Just to clarify, too, Andy, when you asked the class to name surprise cuts a couple weeks ago, who was your pick?
I believe it was Ramondre Stevenson, okay, and I believe the picture I painted was, let's just say he puts the ball on the ground in, say, joint practices or preseason game. I didn't know he would do it in just a scrimmage soon, but yeah, I think that's something to keep an eye on.
Just making sure that you were validating your pick there with that question.
Genius walks alone.
Absolutely, as it always does.
Oh, boy.
To stick on the offense, also coming out of the scrimmage on Friday, the apparent injury to Kendrick Bourne. I know Mike Vrabel saying that we're probably not going to see him much this week. How much does his potential just lack of availability complicate an already pretty complicated wide receiver decision?
So I was thinking that at this point prior to the injury on Friday that he was probably the on the outside looking in, and it's not because of anything that he's done or hasn't done. I just think you know what he is. And then when you start to go look at the numbers, I mean, I think you have four locks, right? Diggs, Douglas, Hollins, and Kyle Williams. I think those guys are put them down on the book. I think Kayshon Boutte has proven that he belongs on the team again. Maybe, but more likely you keep six and try to slide an Efton Chisholm or even a Javon Baker, who had a pretty nice day today, to the practice squad. And we all get all nervous about, oh, they'll never make it through waivers. Like 95% of the guys make it through waivers. It doesn't happen very often where someone gets claimed off waivers. And you'd be talking about someone in Baker who had one catch last year, was a fourth-round pick, and had been taken off, you know, people's boards because of character concerns. And, you know, Chisholm wasn't on too many people's radar, certainly didn't get drafted. So then I just kind of look at Bourne and think, like, could I see Kendrick Bourne being traded back to San Francisco for a late-round pick as they go through some wide receiver stuff there? Yeah, I could totally see that.
Mike Giardi, Boston Sports Journal, joining us here on WEEI Afternoons. I wasn't there, Mike. We were here at Fenway Park watching a great baseball game, and I know there was some unique scoring system where Stretch was giving out points for various things, but the quarterback of the New England Patriots, one of the things that I hear about him all offseason, sooner or later he's got to start winning games. He couldn't win games last year. How did he lose a scrimmage to Dobbs? Like, is that a bad sign? Is that a bad way to start the year? The first time they did anything closely competitive, he lost.
I would just be more concerned about just the overall level at which he performed. And, you know, they were mixing and matching. So, you know, he had the left side of the offensive line, but the right side was on the other team. And, you know, the different pieces being played at wide receiver with him. But, like, there was one series where he had three throwaways. And, you know, we don't have the luxury of looking back at the practice tape. We don't get that. You're only looking at it live, and you're like, well, could he have, was there somebody open? He didn't see him. You know, I guess you take the throwing it away and say, well, at least he didn't throw an interception. Well, he did that twice anyways. One was, I thought, you know, a slightly errant pass. By the way, I apologize for the lawn service next to my house here making all kinds of noise. one was an errant pass, kind of threw it behind Stephon Diggs. Kobe Minor was able to get his hands on it, and then was picked off by Robert Splaine. And then sort of the miscommunication with Kyle Williams on the outside to basically end the practice on what would have been a pick six, but Austin Wisely slid down at the 2-yard line because, you know, they were sort of playing into the game, and you would have been able to run out the clock there. So, you know, Vrabel talked about that today and said, hey, if the cornerback is flat-footed, it's a yes or no. You're either not throwing it or you're telling, you know, you're looking at Kyle and Kyle's got to go by him. And they didn't have that sort of communication there, and you hope they can learn from it. But I just, it was a little rough to see, a little shaky at times. You could see some hesitation in this game. And I don't think there's been a ton of that this camp, but when it does show up, then his footwork gets a little wonky sometimes, and the release gets a little wonky sometimes. It's like that's the moment when some of the things that we talked about a lot last year going into the year kind of pop up for him.
Kind of off of that, in your opinion, because you've seen good quarterbacks, you've seen Mac Jones, like you've kind of seen the gamut in terms of quarterbacks with the Patriots. Is Drake being challenged enough? Are they asking enough of Drake where you think he is getting better day after day in this camp?
I do think they're challenging him. I do think they're. I think it's been a good camp, not a great camp. I mean, some people will tell you it's like an A-plus camp. I'm probably more in the B-minus camp. But when you consider learning a new offense for the fourth time in 4 years, you know, learning a whole different language here, you know, assimilating new pieces into the offense in terms of the receiver position. Like, I've been pretty pleased with it, and I think they are too. I think one thing is interesting is if you guys, you know, I don't love the Forged in Foxborough and all these things that they release, but every time they release a clip where Vrabel's talking to May, Vrabel's always telling May, like, go talk to your guys. Like, go over there. So he's like, there's like a continued pushing him in terms of being a leader and sort of interacting with his teammates. So you start to wonder, is that something that just doesn't necessarily come naturally to him? And does he just want to lead by example and play? And, you know, clearly that position requires more. So I think that's something to keep kind of watching as we go forward.
Something that might help Drake May's leadership is, I don't know, number one wide receiver named Terry McLaurin, who could be coming to town with the Washington Commanders. Any chance that he stays in town? Give me the breakdown on what are the chances that Terry McLaurin could get traded to the Patriots.
I put it at 0.0.
You suck.
I don't see how. I don't see how in the hell. Like, I get it. They're at odds here. He wants what DK Metcalf got. They look at the Courtland Sutton deal, which, by the way, McLaurin's people had to hate last week, and say, no, you guys are the same age. Like, that's more of the reasonable 4-92 versus 5-150 and 60-something guaranteed. But I think at the end of the day, this is all posturing, and that Washington will look at their situation and say, we have a really good quarterback on a rookie contract, and yes, this might hurt us 3 years down the line. We might have dead money for Terry McLaurin, or Terry McLaurin becomes a 30-catch guy in 2028. But for 2025 and 26, like, you got to have him on the roster. So I just don't – it's like the Parsons thing. I just don't see how it ends up happening. I just – there's too much value there for the player with the team. They'll figure it out.
Oh, okay. So I was going to represent the Ted Johnson delegate for defensive excellence. Would you also put Micah Parsons at 0.0?
So I look, Parsons is awesome, but you're talking about, look at the Khalil Mack deal from, was that 18 or 19? 2 ones, a 3, and a 6. I think they got a future second back, but like, that's real, real draft capital. Then you got to turn around and give him 4 and 160, 4 and 170, and most of that's going to be guaranteed. Like, yeah, he's awesome. I just, that's a lot to give up. And then to pay him basically like he's a quarterback. I just don't think it makes a lot of sense for where this team is right now. You know, you could actually make the argument that McLaurin would be the more valuable piece for where they are in their build than Parsons is. I think your defenses should be pretty good. They don't have a Micah Parsons, I get. But, like, when you start talking about the assets you have to give up, it's almost like, I'll take my chances in the draft that I can find a guy like that, and, you know, in the mid-first round, just like the Cowboys did.
Before we let you go, we crowdsourced this one from the Twitch chat. What's the weakest link on this football team in your eyes after whatever it is, 2 weeks of training camp?
It's still the offensive line. I don't know.
Oh, no kidding. No kidding. Really?
Yeah.
Really?
No, I know. I just don't know. Well, but I'm not going to compare it to DeMontre Jacobs and Vidarian Lowe. Although,
no, it's three rookies
guys.
Starting. You want three rookies starting? A left tackle who should be a guard who should be a center, and a right tackle who shouldn't be playing? That sounds better to me. Talk about it.
Hmm. I don't know where you get your third. Where do you get your third rookie? You start Marcus Bryant?
I was reading all you guys, Marcus Bryant, who I never even heard of until last week, is getting reps out there.
Well, here's what they're doing. Right, but here's what they're doing right now. They're trying to figure out who can be the swing tackle. If it's, you know, Vidarian Lowe came back today, so it was his first day back. He's probably the odds-on favorite to be your swing tackle because he has played some right and obviously played last year as your starting left tackle. Mm. But, like, I think they're just looking at him, Jack Conley, the undrafted free agent out of BC, Bryant, and even Jacobs, and saying, exactly. But you're saying, can one of you guys do both? Because if you can, then you probably carve yourself a spot on the roster. If you can't, then you're probably practice squad or, you know, see you later.
Okay, well, you did agree that the weakest link on the team is the offensive line. Nice hit, Mike Giardi. Even though you didn't agree with me on everything, we'll still have you back in the future. Thanks for joining us. That's Mike Giardi, Boston Sports Journal. We'll talk to you next week, Mike.
See you, boys.
See ya. Up next here on WEEI Afternoons, we need to react to a couple things he said. And he was a bit of a wet blanket, I'm not going to lie. There was a little negativity. And
not everybody's as optimistic as you.
Well, I did note that, you know, he was acknowledging, some people are telling you it's an A, I'm kind of a B minus or a C. And there was a B minus C tone to a lot of his answers. Yes. So we'll touch on some of that tone from Mike Giardi next here on WEEI Afternoons.
WEEI.
WEEI. New England Sports Original.